fighting back the pain, trying to see how bad it was. It's impossible. If you released pressure on the wound, he might bleed out in moments. A shadow fell across him, and he looked up to see Wave Sign standing over him, wreathed in a halo of spinning frost.
Hurts? Maybe I'll numb it.
He raised his hands, runnels of water snaking down his arms to ball around his fists, where they spun, violent and sharp-looking, tiny waves tipped with icy razors. Therese stepped between them.
No way, Ted.
Move! I'm not gonna hurt you, and you're not gonna hurt me.
Wrong.
The Hydromancer's head wobbled, stretched, losing shape, running down his shoulders. Therese placed her hands over Oscar's thigh, and he felt the magic warn him, the bullet sliding forward and popping out the rear of his leg to lie in the moss. Soldiers raced toward him, leveling their carbines. Then they doubled over, their hair crumpled, and skin flaking off the plaza as one of the assassins rolled them. She extended her hand, drawing the water up, until there were nothing but piles of glowing dust. A fireball exploded into her chest. A pyromancer advanced past his fallen soldiers. Britton recognized his perfect black hair and smug smile from the raid that first took down Sarah Downer. At his side shambled two dead goblins and a soldier, his head mostly severed and attached to his body only by a strap of flesh. True Love came behind them, arms extended and brow furrowed with concentration. Around him, dead goblins tangled with their living fellows, stabbing with broken spear shafts or kicking, punching. And then Britton looked up, and all hope died. A huge gate opened for him. LSA Portcullis' Bay and a black maw behind him. An armored personnel carrier rolled through behind the soft forces. Atop the turret, a gunner hunched behind a 50-caliber machine gun. All around them, the goblins fell back. A few of the white-painted sorcerers weren't even bothering to fight, and instead herded their folk away from the plaza, making for the gate on the far side of the palisade wall. Britton had no time to make a count, but many of the remaining enrollees lay sprawled in the dirt. One of Richards' whispered wolves lay dead beside him. Peapod lay face down in the dirt, smoke rising from her back.
I can't win this. Not anymore. I have to get us out of here. God is helping them. I've only led them to their deaths.
Therese rose to meet the pyromancer, but fell away as a bullet clipped her shoulder. She clapped her hand to the wound, her brow furrowing as the magic worked. Swift fell from the sky, hitting the plaza hard enough to bounce in front of where another enrollee knelt, cradling his face. Fitzy stood over him, blood streaming from his fist. Fitzy motioned at the Sock Force, and they began to fall back around the APC and his giant smoking gun. With the SAS enrollees and Marty's tribe battered and pinned down by the stream of fire, there was no need to risk his men in close quarters. Harlequin landed beside the pyromancer, depressed Britton's magic, and smiled. Behind him, the line of Sock soldiers advanced into the square in front of the APC. The goblins had fled. Those of the enrollees who remained ducked behind the stone chairs.
No pardon for you this time, Oscar. I'm afraid you're all out of chances. Shame, really. I had high hopes for your redemption. You might have been able to make at least some of your crap right. Now we'll never know.
And then he was reeling sideways as Therese charged him. Britton felt his magic return as Harlequin transferred his current to suppressing her.
Never say never!
Britton dove forward, spreading his arms. One caught Harlequin about the waist, checking his flight. The other caught the pyromancer around the neck. A gate snapped open behind them. Britton knocked both men through and onto the top of a flight observation tower back at his old base at the 158th. The structure loomed nearly 200 feet above the flight line, its hexagonal roof barely 8 feet across and covered with slick tile. The pyromancer couldn't arrest his momentum. Harlequin somersaulted in the air, landing on top of an adjacent water tower beside the flight line fire station. Britton turned the gate and slid it sideways after him, but Harlequin stretched out his arms, and the gate vanished as the suppression canceled Britton's magic.
You blew it, pal! Unless you've learned how to fly, that is, you can just cool your heels up there while my crew mops up the rest of your pals.
Screw you!
The top of the tower offered no way down, with only the huge drop to the concrete flight line below. There was was no hatch through the roof. Harlequin was right. Unless he'd learned to fly, there was no way down.
Go ahead and keep me suppressed! So long as you do, you can't come after me! We're gonna just sit here until we get old?
Nope! Got plans for you, pal!
The sound was deeper than a Kiowa, and Britton recognized the low pitch as one of the larger Blackhawks. They were usually on practice flights or patrols around the base. It wouldn't have taken the pilot more than a few seconds to respond to Harlequin's call and divert to his position. Britton could see the minigun barrels pointing out the sides of the helo as it dove toward him. It made no effort to go broadside as it approached at high speed, no effort to bring the guns to bear. Then Britton noted that Harlequin's pistol was still in the drop holster strapped to his thigh. He stood with a clear shot and all the time in the world to aim, but instead had his arms crossed, waiting.
He wants to capture me again. Maybe he was willing to kill me if he had to, but I still have value to these people.
Britton turned and sprinted for the edge of the tower.
No!
Harlequin leapt off his perch, dropping the suppression and flying to intercept Britton's fall. At the edge of the tower, Britton dug in his heels, abruptly reversing direction and throwing himself back onto the tower roof. He spun to face the Blackhawk. A gate opened right before its nose. Directly on the other side stood the APC, its gun silent for the moment. Fitzy and the bulk of the SOC force gathered around it. Britton could see the pilot through the helo's windscreen, hauling on the cycling controls, but it was far too late to pull up. The Blackhawk passed neatly through the gate. Britton closed the gate and leapt off the tower. He tackled the Aeromancer in midair and opened a gate beneath him just before the stone chairs. Harlequin's body cushioned his fall, but both men still hit the ground hard enough to jar them apart. Britton took a moment to assess the situation. The battlefield was a ruin. The aircraft was buried halfway through a small two-story hut, which had collapsed over it, the thatching burning brightly. The APC had been knocked over on its side. The turret popped off and smoldered. Sarah Downer scrambled in the wreckage, her enemy forgotten, desperately trying to haul broken beams off the crushed bodies of soldiers. Britton slewed his head to the right. Harlequin stirred weakly on the ground, blood running from a gash in his head, half-conscious. Behind them, Therese, Swift, Peapod, and a few others had begun to stand, their faces streaked with blood and filth, their mouths open in shock. Harlequin began to prop himself onto his elbows. Britton shot out a boot heel and caught him in the temple. Pyre lay a few feet before him, sprawled on his side. His eyes were open, seeing nothing.
Fitzy. Fucking Fitzy.
Britton found Fitzy lying on top of two dead soldiers. His wounded arm had been burned to a stump from the elbow down, the wound mostly cauterized, but still leaking blood. Ribs protruded from his ruined side. His eyes darted around, his good arm scrabbling in the dirt, searching for a weapon. Truelove was pushing himself to his feet behind him, swaying, blood streaking his shredded uniform. Richards sprawled beside him, his charred body cut neatly in half by a chunk of the helo's tail boom. Britton staggered a few more steps and collapsed on top of the chief warrant officer.
Kill you! Fucking kill you!
You're done killing!
Fitzy grinned at Britton's closeness, then moved his good arm with sudden speed to his belt, hauling out a small knife and lunging for him. Britton twisted aside, and the slim blade found his thigh instead of his side. Britton headbutted his former instructor, who sprawled in the dirt. Britton tried to open a gate, and found that Fitzy, for all his injuries, could still suppress him. He looked around for a weapon, and settled on a fragment of the helo's rotors, its jagged edges sharp. He snatched it up as Truelove regained his senses, and their eyes met. They held stares for a moment. Finally, the necromancer nodded and turned away. Britton raised the rotor fragment over his head.
Fuck you!
No. Fuck you!
Britton examined the knife wound in his thigh. The gouge was deep, gently oozing blood around the edges, but he wouldn't bleed out anytime soon. He tried to stand and found that he could, though his legs shook. Therese could heal him later. For now, he reached out, grabbing Truelove's arm.
Oh, stay with me.
Britton looked for Downer, but was distracted by Harlequin, who had begun to stir again at the base of the tree, pushing himself onto his elbows. Britton took a limping step toward him, savoring the trip. Somehow, they had won. Swift reached Harlequin before Britton, leaping over the stone chairs and putting a boot heel on the sorcerer's neck. Swift's black hair had melted to the sides of his face from a blast of Harlequin's lightning. One eye drooped into a track of burned skin that Britton knew would scar terribly. Peapod appeared behind him, Marty at her side. Swift winced, the side of his face twitching uncontrollably.
You recognize me, you fucker? Look at me! Open your fucking eyes! Look at me! It's me, remember? You killed my girlfriend and my child. I killed myself trying to fucking earn somebody. When I was about ready to give up, I met Shy. So you killed her. Do you like me now? I'm a fucking product of your goddamn system. But here's the best part. You lose. I've got you, and I am going to kill you so slowly and horribly that before I'm done, you'll spit on your precious laws just for a momentary break in your suffering! You fucking son of a bitch! I am gonna kill you! I am gonna kill you! I am gonna kill you!
Britton paused, stunned by the depth of Swift's hatred. He could feel Swift's current gathering like a tidal wave, a well of potential energy bubbling beneath his skin. He must have been burning with it. Britton had no love for Harlequin, but he felt Fitzy's blood still warm on him. The sensation made him feel ill, weak. Harlequin was a bastard, but he was not Fitzy. Britton opened his mouth to say something, but stopped. Swift's scarred face made him terrifying. If Britton spoke, he might divert some of that insensate rage onto himself. He didn't know what Swift would do. Downer had no such compunction.
Don't you hurt him! Don't you hurt him!
Swift's eyes never left the Aromancer. He merely stuck out one hand, pointing it at Downer. She slid in the mud, the stench of cooked meat rising from her.
No!
Britton interdicted Swift's magical current. The strength of it nearly overwhelmed him, and it took him several seconds to properly suppress Swift. Downer was alive, but hurt badly. Truelove rushed to her side, cradling her in his arms. Swift felt the suppression take hold and whipped his head toward Britton. He bent in one fluid motion, grabbing Harlequin's throat with one hand and yanking his pistol from its drop holster with the other. He stood again, the pistol barrel hovering rock steady over the Aromancer's face.
I don't need magic to do this!
Don't!
Therese raced between them, hooking an arm under Harlequin's armpit and hauling him upright. Harlequin drew magic to him, but Britton met his eyes and shook his head.
You do? And you're dead, pal.
Harlequin didn't release the magic, but neither did he bind it to anything. Swift didn't move, pointing the gun doggedly over Teresa's shoulder.
Get out of the way! You saved our lives and I don't want to shoot you, but he is not getting away!
Therese only stood, shaking her head silently. Britton looked down at Fitzy's gore splashed across him and felt sick with himself. Rage had overcome him, and he had murdered the chief warrant officer. Therese wouldn't permit that. Not when a man was too weak to defend himself. She was better than that.
No, Swift. We're letting him go.
She gestured at the few remaining soldiers.
We're letting all of them go.
I'm not kidding. Get the fuck out of the way.
We came here to escape. We've done that. Killing more people won't accomplish anything.
That's what selfers do. We're not selfers, Swift. We're not the sock. We're the real good guys, and it's high time we started acting like it. I'm through with magic as a bludgeon. It stops here. He goes free, back where he came from. They all do.
Britton met Marty's eyes as he said it. He knew he couldn't speak for the Matab on Sara, but he also knew that he couldn't permit them to kill captured prisoners, no matter how angry they were over the attack on their village.
All water, baby, right?
All water, baby. Always help.
We've all lost something. Killing him won't bring anyone back to life.
You're gonna have to kill me if you want him to live.
Therese paused, shook her head, then stepped away from Harlequin, spreading her arms and moving to stand beside Britain.
I've had it with killing. You do what you have to, Swift, but you can't fight the whole world, not forever. Sooner or later, you're gonna have to accept things as they are, stop bitching, and start the hard work of changing stuff.
Swift's lip curled. He pressed the gun forward, and Britain tensed for the ringing shot, for Harlequin's body to jerk and slump. He closed his eyes. Silence. When Britain opened his eyes, Swift had lowered the gun. His eyes were on his feet. Two drops tapped on his boot tips. Tears, Britain realized.
Fuck. Don't think I don't appreciate the gesture, but it's not my call. I'll be back, Oscar, for you and your friends. This won't change anything. I'll come for you.
Britton crossed to Swift and took the pistol from his hand. Swift gave it up willingly, his grip limp and spent. His eyes remained fixed on his feet. Britton swallowed, felt his gorge rise, because there was one more killing that had to be done if they were ever to be safe. Britton turned, dropping Swift's suppression to open a gate directly before the chair where Billy sat, his mother's elephantine arms pale around his neck. His vacant blue eyes widened, his mouth working in shock at the sight of a gate not of his own making. He whipped his head from side to side, pulling one of the leads loose. His mother fumbled to reconnect it, her cat's eye framed glasses going askew. Harlequin stiffened, but he lacked the strength to do anything.
I'm sorry, Billy. It's the only way.
Ah! Billy, no! Ah!
No, I don't think you're coming for anybody. Not anymore.
Therese approached Swift, placing a hand on his burned face, the magic flowing out and smoothing the skin into shiny pink patches.
It's okay. It's going to be okay.
How can it ever be okay?
I don't know how it can ever be okay, but at least now we've got a chance to try to get it there.
Britton pictured a trip to Washington, D.C. he had made in high school. He snapped the gate open, the image of his memories playing true. The front lawn of the White House was clearly visible through the shimmering surface of the portal.
Off you go, Harlequin. Maybe you can explain to them what you've been up to. I'll be watching the newspapers for your quote. Best of luck with that.
Just what the hell do you think you're doing?
Something new. Go back to your masters. Tell them that their precious regulations are no longer valid. Tell them there's a new way. From now on, latent people get a real choice. And I don't mean a choice between soldier and selfer. Tell them if they don't get my message out, I'll do it my damn self. You can't stop me from doing the one thing you fear the most, telling the truth. I can make sure that people know about the source, the fob, what you really do with probes, everything. And this, tell them I'll be visiting them real soon to discuss the new order. President Walsh, Senator Whalen, all of them. They have this one chance to do the right thing. After that, I'll visit the newspapers and TV stations. You don't get to decide how magic is regulated anymore. You know why? Because I can be anywhere at any time. I can spread the word. I can show everyone the world they're so desperately trying to hide. And there's no way they can stop me.
You are one hell of a dreamer, Oscar. I'll be seeing you real soon.
I'll be ready.
When the last of the soldiers was safely through, he closed the gate and stared out over the ruins of the village. Already, the wreckage of the helicopter had begun to cool, and several goblins picked through it. Behind him, Britton could feel the gazes of what remained of the group he'd led out of the wreckage of the sass. Therese, Swift, Tsunami, Peapod. Truelove cradled Downer, still unconscious. Britton could feel the tension of their expectation, waiting for his attention. But he took a moment before that next step, inhaling the intensified smells of the source. The air was still thick with the stench of blood, fear, oil, and spent gunpowder. But underneath it was something sweeter. A light odor that spoke of the hearths and the houses still standing, of the buds on the old tree behind him that had been spared the fire, of the acres of grass and foreign trees just outside the palisade wall. Oscar Britton turned to face the coming dawn. Shadow Ops Trilogy, Book 1, Control Point, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2012, Mike Cole. All rights reserved. Recorded with permission of the author. Copyright 2015, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Ken Jackson, Jefferson Russell, Thomas Keegan, Nora Ashrati, Susan Linsky, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Eric Messner, Jonathan Church, Tim Getman, Lily Beacon, Matthew McGee, Steve Wanall, Drew Kopis, Andy Brownstein, Tim Carlin, Richard Rowan, Joel David Santner, David Korn, Kenyatta Rogers, Joe Brack, Dawn Ursula, Doug B. Brown, Nick DePinto, Colleen Delaney, Barbara Pinolini, Jeff Allen, Tara Giordano, David Harris, Christopher Graybill, Nanette Suhar, Michael John Casey, Chris Walker, Mike Cole, Terrence Hazelford, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Scott McCormick, David Jordan, Yasmin Twazov, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Jernigan, James Konacek. Directed by Ken Jackson. Dialogue editing by John Glennon. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers and Patrick Stratton. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Prinsland. If you enjoyed Shadow Ops, Control Point, be sure to look for the World of the Lupi series and the Piecer series, available at road stops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pumped titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Also coming spring 2015, Shadow Ops Book 2, Fortress Frontier.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.